From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, how Sidney Powell and her big lie about voter fraud in the 2020 election is impacting the Texas legislature and its drive for election integrity.
I can hardly wait to put forth all the evidence we have collected on Dominion. I'm going to release the Kraken.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies.
Elections will come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Chair Kane.
Here.
Vice Chair Gonzalez.
It was standing room only, with folks also in the Capitol Overflow Room on Thursday for the House Elections Committee. The agenda was loaded with bills to be considered. Some, if passed, will make it more difficult to vote in Texas. Most of the attention was focused on House Bill 6, authored by Elections Committee Chair Briscoe Kane. HB 6 is an omnibus election security or voter suppression bill, depending on one's party affiliation. The companion bill in the Senate is SB 7. Certainly, there was a lot going on at the Capitol that day. Also on Thursday, there was an emotional hearing for the George Floyd Act, a sweeping police reform bill named after an African-American man killed by a white Minneapolis police officer last year. It would in part ban chokeholds and require officers to intervene if their partner is using excessive force.
I'm very humbled to be introducing the George Floyd Act this session. And at the same time, I'm profoundly heartbroken that it has taken the nationwide outrage over the murder of a black person, a father, a brother, a son, an uncle, a friend, to insist on meaningful conversations about racial biases and demand accountability for those who are sworn to protect us.
Representative Sinfronia Thompson introduced the George Floyd Act, HB 88, to the Texas House Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee.
George Floyd wasn't the first person to be brutalized and murdered by police officers in our criminal justice system, and he won't be the last if the state doesn't do something to correct that problem now. There are several components of this bill, Mr. Chairman and members. Qualified immunity is one of them. The powers and the duties of police officers are another one. Use of force is another one.
State Senator Royce West is carrying the George Floyd Act in the Senate.
If we just stood here, Mr. Chairman, for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, that gives us a realistic idea how long Chauvin had his knee on George Floyd's neck. You heard him. Mama. Mama. There shouldn't even be an issue, realistically, about whether we pass a bill. I think the issues should be related to what we put in the bills.
And also on Thursday, there was a marathon hearing on expanding gun rights in Texas. The big legislative push is for open, permitless carry of firearms without any training or licensing. But we're focusing on the issue of voting rights because it is central to having a legitimate and functioning democracy. And it was that Thursday hearing on elections that broke down into a public farce. And to get to that, you have to start here.
You know, we use largely a Venezuelan voting machine, in essence, to count our vote. We let this happen, we're going to become Venezuela.
It's November, and former President Trump's former attorney, Rudy Giuliani, is speaking to reporters with black streaks dripping down the side of his face. He's at the Republican National Committee headquarters in Washington, D.C. Giuliani and Texas-based attorney Sidney Powell are laying out their case that Trump's re-election was stolen.
What we are really dealing with here and uncovering more by the day is the massive influence of communist money through Venezuela, Cuba, and likely China in the interference with our elections here in the United States. The Dominion voting systems, the Smartmatic technology software, and the software that goes in other computerized voting systems here as well, not just Dominion, were created in Venezuela at the direction of Hugo Chavez to make sure he never lost an election after one constitutional referendum came out the way he did not want it to come out.
None of this is true. It was all an invention that failed over and over again in the courtrooms. There was no evidence to support these fantastic claims. But that didn't seem to stop or bother Sidney Powell from trying to sell this bunk.
Dominion operators went in and injected votes and changed the whole system. They run a computer algorithm on it as needed to either flip votes, take votes out, or alter the votes to make a candidate win.
It has been used all over the world to defy the will of people who wanted freedom. There is statistical evidence. There is all kinds of mathematical evidence, essentially forensic evidence.
Dominion and its minions and other state officials everywhere are apparently out there trying to destroy everything they can get to before we can seize it.
It is one huge, huge criminal conspiracy.
Powell's claims were as detailed as they were outrageous, and she promised to release all the evidence that would eventually prove everything and that would overturn the 2020 presidential election, but that never happened, not even close.
I can hardly wait to put forth all the evidence we have collected on Dominion, starting with the fact it was created to produce altered voting results in Venezuela for Hugo Chavez. I'm going to release the Kraken.
Eventually, Powell's statements about the election fraud got too outlandish, even for Trump. He formally distanced himself from her, stating that she was practicing law on her own and that she was not a member of the legal team, although she continued to meet with the president at the White House. On January 8th, Dominion voting machines sued Powell for defamation and asked for over $1.3 billion in damages. On February 4th, Smartmatic Voting Systems filed a defamation lawsuit that accused Powell, Fox News, and some individual hosts at Fox News and Rudy Giuliani of engaging in a disinformation campaign against the company. They asked for $2.7 billion in damages. And on Friday, Dominion Voting Systems filed a $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit against Fox News, arguing that the cable news giant falsely claimed in an effort to boost faltering ratings that the voting company had rigged the 2020 election. In response, this week, on March 22nd, lawyers defending Powell against Dominion's lawsuit filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit. They argued that no reasonable person would conclude that the statements by Powell about the 2020 election were truly statements of fact. Instead, it was clear to reasonable persons that Powell's claims were her opinions and legal theories. Furthermore, the lawyers claimed that Dominion could not prove that Powell took action with actual malice because she believed the allegations then and she believes them now. There's a big problem with this legal argument. Her own lawyers are saying that only an idiot would believe Sidney Powell and that Sidney Powell believes Sidney Powell. Therefore, Sidney Powell is an idiot. And then there is this.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
Good evening. I'm Judy Woodruff on the NewsHour tonight. Chaos at the Capitol. A mob supporting and encouraged by President Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol, breaking windows, pushing through police with shots fired inside as lawmakers were gathered to count the votes confirming President-elect Biden won the election. A disturbing scene the country has never witnessed.
The mob is chanting, "Stop the steal," and they believe Sidney Powell.
We got to stop this steal from happening because if we don't, nobody's ever going to vote again. There's not going to be any integrity in our voting system, so everybody's probably just going to stop voting because if it's not going to matter.
And then there is this. Texas Governor Greg Abbott is calling for new laws to fix Texas elections, which are not broken. But if these laws are passed, it will make it more difficult for many in Texas to vote.
Our objective is very simple, and that is to ensure that every eligible voter gets to vote. It's also to ensure that only eligible votes are the ones that count at the ballot box.
There is a direct line from Sidney Powell's big lie, the Capitol mob attack on January 6th, to Governor Greg Abbott's Texas Get Tough voter laws, and what happened at the House Elections Committee hearing on Thursday. Chairman Kaine presented HB 6, and he appeared to be unprepared and ill-suited to explain his own bill. When Kaine started to present the legislation, he followed the custom and handed the gavel off to the vice chairman, Jessica Gonzalez, a Dallas Democrat, so that she could run the meeting. But when Gonzalez attempted to call a witness, Representative Nicole Collier, a Tarrant County Democrat, Kaine shut things down.
At this time, as chair, we'll ask if there's any other members on this dais who wish to ask questions of the bill author. Any members? Any members of the Committee on the House Elections desiring to ask questions of the author of House Bill 6? Hearing none. At this time, we will now move to witnesses.
Chair Kaine, Chair Collier has a question. Are you gonna not recognize her?
Representative Collier, respectfully, this section of the bill layout is for members of this committee to ask questions, and you're certainly free to testify from the podium and have members ask you questions. But it has not been this practice of this committee to allow members to ask questions of witnesses from this dais.
Collier is the chair of the Texas Legislative Black Caucus. There are no black members on the elections committee. The caucus previously asked to be able to participate in the hearing. Voting rights advocates argue that Kaine's bill and others being pushed by Abbott are harmful to voting rights, particularly to African Americans.
Representative
Vice Chair Gonzalez, at this moment, you were not chairing this committee.
I have not yielded the gavel.
I don't think it's something that has to really be asked for, but I understand. So I'm not recognizing anyone other than a member of this committee at this time.
The hearing was shut down, first as a recess, and then that turned out to be for the entire day.
Without objection, the committee will recess.
Hundreds of people had signed up to testify about this bill, including former Congressman Beto O'Rourke. They had traveled to Austin for the sake of voting rights, but they were ignored. Kaine promised there would be another hearing on the bill, and they can return then. Central to every argument being made to toughen voting laws in Texas is the need to restore confidence in our elections. But according to recent polling, Texans of both parties say that they feel that elections in Texas are secure. Joshua Blank is the research director at the Texas Politics Project.
Well, I think the first thing to know about people's attitudes towards elections is that it's another example of the national conversation really drowning out some big differences, you know, both I think across the states and amongst people. You know, and while Texans as a whole are less than confident in the results of U.S. elections, according to University of Texas, Texas Tribune polling data recorded in February, nearly 80% say that the official election results in Texas elections are accurate. And that includes both 88% of Democrats, but also, and maybe surprisingly, 76% of Republicans. And so really, when we're talking about distrust of election results, more than anything, we're actually talking about a generic distrust in national elections, not necessarily the way elections are run here.
And you're saying that there's a bipartisan belief that elections in Texas are pretty good.
That's right. So, you know, 89% of Democrats trust the results of U.S. elections. They also 88% trust the results of Texas elections. The big difference is really amongst Republicans. Again, 76% say that they think that U.S. election, or I'm sorry, Texas election results are accurate. Only 23% say the same of U.S. election results. So 73% say that that U.S. election results are not accurate.
And given controversial topics, it's unusual to see that we have such strong support from both parties for the reliability of our elections.
I think that is, I mean, I think that is, it's sort of one of the assumptions that's being made right now, that after, you know, a year or really more than a year, I mean, you could even, depends on where you want to put the end point on this. You could say a year of the presidential campaign denigrating elections. You could say 4 years of denigrating elections, but really this is an effort that goes back over a decade that's really been, I mean, spearheaded by Republican elected officials calling into question the integrity of elections without evidence to present. But that message has been consistent. It's been clear. And even though Texans as a whole trust the results of their own elections and Republicans trust the results of Texas elections, still the plurality of Republicans want to make election laws here more difficult in that same polling. They want to make laws that govern voting more strict or left alone. Only 5% of Republicans would actually say that they want to see election laws made less strict.
So the flip side of the question, and maybe you've asked Texans this in your UT and TT polls, do they think that there is voter suppression in Texas, or is it easy to vote in Texas?
Well, I think, you know, that, so that's interesting. So, you know, I think what we know from a polling both in February conducted, I think, in the lead up to the election, but also multiple times. And I think, you know, something I should say here is these attitudes predate Donald Trump. I think it's very easy for especially Democrats to say, you know, Donald Trump whipped up this frenzy about elections. But these attitudes existed even before Donald Trump took office. And what we find is that about 4 in 5 Republicans going into the 2020 election said that ineligible voters voting would be a serious problem in the upcoming election. About the same share of Democrats, about 80%, said eligible voters being prevented from voting is going to be a serious problem in the upcoming election. And so ultimately, partisans of both sides come to this issue from very, very different perspectives. And to your second point there about, you know, how they view the voting process, Republicans as a group find voting in Texas to be a very easy process. 76% of them say that voting in Texas for them personally is very easy compared to only 45% of Democrats. And amongst those people who, let's say, are, you know, in the political independents who are not necessarily following party leaders, 49% of them say it's very easy. So significantly less than Republicans. The only other group that even comes close to matching their belief in the ease of the system are actually rural Texans. 75% of rural Texans in our polling say it's very easy to vote compared to only 59% of suburban Texans and 54% of urban Texans. And so ultimately, you know, what you see, you know, if you want to contextualize the whole thing, what you say is for Republicans in the state, they think that the election results are accurate. I mean, they should, they're winning most of them. They think it's easy to vote, but ultimately they see fraud everywhere, even without evidence, and want to see the laws tightened up going forward.
So fraud everywhere, but we're also hearing from them that zero tolerance, even if one vote is cast inappropriately or fraudulently, then that's enough to put in harsher election laws. We've heard that from some leading Republican politicians recently. Is that attitude somewhere in the polling as well?
Not that attitude specifically. I mean, I think ultimately that's a rhetorical flourish that asks, that basically forces people to defend fraud. I mean, ultimately, no one wants to go and say, well, I'm for a little bit of fraud, or this little bit of fraud doesn't matter. But ultimately, that basically is a way to sidestep the conversation about how many voters are, how many voters in one, you know, the oldest continuing democracy in the world are prevented from voting based on laws meant to prevent fraud that, for the most part, you know, Republicans have failed to produce evidence for.
It's also interesting on what they're willing to have zero tolerance for. There's a zero tolerance for illegal voting, but there's no zero tolerance for like mass shootings, you know.
Well, I mean, I'd say, you know, or, you know, I mean, this is also, I'll add to that. I mean, I think, you know, if you're watching the Texas legislature as we're recording this today, they're looking at the election-related bills in which there's zero tolerance for, you know, any ineligibly cast vote, but there seems to be plenty of tolerance for police officers shooting unarmed civilians by accident. And the other bill that we're hearing today is the George Floyd Act. You know, so I mean, it's convenient to say that there's zero tolerance for voter fraud, but ultimately I think, you know, a fairer question is fraud altering the outcomes? And nobody believes that fraud is altering the outcomes. Nobody's presented systemic evidence of fraud. So really what it comes down to is we've shifted the discussion from, you know, specific instances of fraud to basically a discussion of the integrity of the system as a whole. And, you know, that's a good political and communication strategy, because ultimately nobody wants to be arguing against integrity.
And what do they mean by integrity?
Well, I think that's the brilliance of the phrasing, because ultimately, when will we have enough integrity in the system? What consolation of laws and how many restrictions and how many punishments can we continue to add to a system that is comparably and demonstrably strict already relative to other states to, whether reduce fraud or increase integrity? There is no maximum amount of integrity that we would say that we would ever be happy with. And so ultimately, as a way to communicate your policy desires, there's really no end to the laws that could be added to reduce, again, unseen fraud.
Right. So when we hear we have zero tolerance for election fraud in Texas, and should the next question be, at what cost? How many people are you willing to exclude from the polls in order to satisfy your imagination that there will be zero election fraud in Texas?
Well, I think that would be a more honest conversation, because ultimately all policies face trade-offs. You know, a policy that's going to do one thing on the one hand is going to have consequences, both intended and unintended, on the other, that, you know, we might not want.
Joshua Blank is the research director at the Texas Politics Project. The Texas Attorney General's office has made a strong case that voter fraud is real, and it's a real threat to Texas democracy. But is that true? How reliable are the AG's numbers? Thomas Boozer Clancy is a staff attorney for the ACLU of Texas.
I think what we're seeing right now is in 2020, there was a massive uptick in individuals getting out and voting. I would note a nonpartisan uptick. And individuals really enjoyed that ability to access the ballot. Not to say that there weren't problems with accessibility, but more and more people came out to vote. And that has scared the Texas leadership. And so what you have seen, which follows a national trend, is that instead of looking for avenues to allow more Texans to vote and to make it easier to vote, they're looking at avenues to close down opportunities to vote, to criminalize the process for voters, for people who assist voters, for volunteer election workers and election administrators. And so they're really trying to make the process more difficult and more scary.
And your findings with the ACLU of Texas is that there is a significant racial component into how the Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and his Elections Integrity Unit is dealing with concerns about voter fraud.
That's correct. We found what appears to be a significant racial disparity in terms of the prosecutions that Ken Paxton's Election Integrity Unit has done. So we filed some Public Information Act requests to get data on the prosecutions under Ken Paxton's Election Integrity Unit. And when we received that data back, one of the things they said is, we don't track any data by race, which was an immediate concern to us. So what we did is we looked at public records, court records, newspaper articles, and then made some reasonable inferences based on surnames. And our findings were that there appears to be a very significant racial disparity in terms of prosecutions. At least 72% of the prosecutions under Ken Paxton's Election Integrity Unit targeted Black or Hispanic individuals. And that number to me is alarming, and it should be alarming to the public and to lawmakers, especially as they're considering bills that would give the Attorney General even more tools and more power to prosecute individuals under the election code.
But you're seeing that they're deliberately targeting people of color or women of color?
You know, we can't say based on our data that they are deliberately targeting those individuals. What we can say is that the data shows that what appears to be 72% of their prosecutions were against Black and Hispanic individuals, and 45% in particular were against women of color. So we're not making the particular claim that they are deliberately targeting them, but we're saying that the data shows that these groups of individuals are being disparately impacted by their prosecutions, and that raises significant red flags.
Now, we have seen the Texas Attorney General's Office Elections Integrity Unit go before the Texas House Committee on Elections and offer testimony that this is a bad problem that we have in Texas, and it's getting worse, exponentially worse. They claimed that there were 500 pending cases targeting people who have committed voter offenses. They painted a very grim picture of what is happening in Texas. However, the ACLU of Texas is not so sure.
That's correct. We thought that 500 number seemed odd. And so we looked at the public information request that we had gotten from the Attorney General's office. And we found that it did not match the Attorney General's own internal data. In fact, right now, there are only, by our count, 43, as of February 12th, 43 pending cases, not 500. I think it's worth noting that whether we're talking about 43 or 500, these are all unproven allegations. But the significant difference between those two numbers is drastic. And we saw actually in the House Elections Committee today that 500 number continues to be used by the legislators because they're relying on the Attorney General to give them the straightforward facts. And here, that number is not correct, or it does not appear to be correct, and the Attorney General should clarify the record.
There seems to be a lot of flex in the way that this language is being used. Is it accounts, or are they cases, or are they, what exactly are we counting?
So it is possible that when the representative for the Attorney General's office got up and repeatedly said that there were 500 cases, what he actually meant to say is that amongst the only 40 some odd cases, there are 500 counts alleged in those cases. That's possible, but that's not the testimony that was given, and that's not how the House committee members have taken that testimony, which became apparent in the Elections Committee hearing this morning, in fact. And there's a significant difference between cases and counts. It is possible when you're charging an individual to elevate the number of counts by charging multiple offenses for essentially the same action. So if you change your charging strategy, essentially, then you're able to trump up those number of counts. And in fact, when the Attorney General representative initially testified, he made a big distinction between, you know, what a count is and what a case is, and then proceeded to testify that there were 500 cases. So it's important to note that counts or cases, these are all unproven allegations, but the public and the legislature should not be given a false impression about the number of cases that are out there.
Thomas Brewster Clancy is a staff attorney for the ACLU of Texas. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page or on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters episodes. And you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.